residents. I know for many years myself, I thought that the goal of this program was abstinence. And I was sorely mistaken. Over and over again, I would get abstinent. I can get abstinent. My problem is that I can't stay abstinent. So I am also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know in Alcoholics Anonymous what my alcohol is. And I abstain from alcohol in any form, in its entirety. But when it came to the food in Overeaters Anonymous, there was a lot of gray areas. And I would look around to my friends in OA, and some people would be abstaining from one substance, and other people would be abstaining from other things. And I would kind of like, you know, wing it and try to figure out what I felt like giving up, you know. I don't know if anybody can relate to that. So a dear friend of mine, who is also an alcoholic, in Overeaters Anonymous, she and I were talking one day, and we decided that there was something missing in Overeaters Anonymous, that we had vital information. We knew that in Alcoholics Anonymous, we had to stay away from our alcohol. But in Overeaters Anonymous, we didn't know what our alcohol was. We had to do a little searching. And what we found was that if we could take sponsees through a searching and fearless moral food inventory, we could actually gather some vital information. Vital. So in your handout, does everybody have a handout? Knowing the best? Okay. We have goals here for this workshop. Now, this workshop is very, very interactive normally. It takes an hour and a half. It's a working workshop. We really get down to it and we do some writing. Today, I have 50 minutes to give you this information. So that's why you have a handout and you can just, I do not have any. All right, so what are we doing in OA? That's our first question. What are we doing here? And OA's primary purpose is Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating. That's one thing. And that means there's a second thing I have to do. Carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. So that explains a lot. Okay, am I carrying out OA's primary purpose? Am I abstaining from compulsive eating? And the only way I can do that is to do it, by practicing it. And am I carrying that message to other people who still suffer? It's my duty. It's my job. It's a boomerang. If I don't throw it out there, I'm not gonna get it back. I can't keep it. And then what does it mean to be abstinent? OA's definition of abstinence is the action of refraining from, one, compulsive eating, and two, compulsive food behaviors. There's two things I'm abstaining from, so we're going to look at those today and try to find some of them. While working towards and maintaining a healthy body weight, spiritual, emotional, and physical recovery is the result of living the Overeaters Anonymous 12-step program. So I need to do a little searching here. So let's identify the problem. What do I really suffer from? I'm told that I'm a compulsive overeater. I can come into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. As a chubby girl, when I first came in, I think I had 40 pounds to lose. And, you know, does that make me a compulsive overeater? Is everybody who's a little overweight a compulsive overeater? Or anybody who's underweight? You know, do they really suffer from anorexia or bulimia or any of the little headings that we have under compulsive eating? And what I find is vital information in the doctor's opinion. Actually, it's not in the doctor's opinion. It's in We Agnostics, of all places. So it's going to identify my problem, and there's simply two questions. Only two. I don't need to answer 20. I mean, you can go there if you want, but I like to confuse things, make the problem bigger than it needs to be. I want to isolate this now. I'm going to ask myself the first question. Do I have a physical allergy? That's a manifestation of an abnormal reaction to, not all food, certain food. Okay? So I'm going to ask myself, when I eat certain foods and engage in certain eating behaviors, do I have little control over the amount that I eat? For me, check. I have what is called a physical allergy. That's just an abnormal reaction. If 9 women in a room are eating normally, and I cannot, that just makes me not the norm. It doesn't make me weak-willed. It doesn't make me insane. It doesn't make me wrong. Okay, I wear glasses, and I don't walk into a room and see most of you don't have glasses on, so I take my glasses on and try to struggle to see without them. I'm going to prove to you I can see without my glasses. You know, I don't do that. I don't have an obsession to see without my glasses. But when it comes to food, I have an obsession to eat like a normal person. I can't. It's proven over and over again that my physical body cannot allow me to do that. I'm going to ask the second question. I have a mental obsession. When I honestly want to, do I find that I cannot stop eating or engaging in certain compulsive behaviors entirely? That means I've given them up. I've given up a certain binge food. And I am sworn off. I am never going to eat that again. Do I find that I cannot, that doesn't hold true for me? No matter what I do, it just doesn't work. I go back to it. Check. So me, as a compulsive overeater, identifying in, I suffer from a physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession. I have both. I cannot eat binge ingredients safely, and I cannot be abstinent contently. Now that's really important to understand, because when I came in, I just thought if I got abstinent, everything would be okay. I'd be happy, joyous, and free. All the promises of the program come true for me if I got abstinent. But that's not, in fact, reality. For me, a real compulsive overeater, my trouble starts when I put that food down. I start experiencing emotions and feelings, and I need that food to calm me, to numb me. It's not even about calming. I need oblivion. So we are going to go to the second page, which looks like a chart. It looks like a wheel. I'm just going to take you through this real quick because there is another workshop today that's going to touch on this more in depth, with more depth. What we're going to see here is what I just explained to you. The mental obsession coupled with the physical allergy. Half of this wheel is going to be about the physical allergy. So if I start at 12 o'clock, high noon here, and I say I have a first bite of something. I decide to put something that I know I should not be eating in my mouth. What happens to me? What, first of all, why do I do it? Why do I put that first bite in? I do it to experience a sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few bites. This looks like this to me. Because Maria can't live with life coming at me. And that's what I feel like. You know, when I'm in the food, I feel like life is coming at me. And I need ease and comfort. What do? I take that first bite. Then I go into the phenomenon of craving. I took that bite, and the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all other interests. That might mean it's more important than taking care of my family today. It might be more important than waking up and working out and getting dressed and brushing my teeth. It might be more important than going to work. That's where food takes me. After that, I go on this well-known stage of a spree or a binge. And now I am eating to overcome a craving beyond my control. You know, my husband would like to say when I was in the food, you know, Maria, even a train stop sometimes. I did not know. I never knew when the train was going to stop. I couldn't predict it. Emerging remorseful and swearing off, this is what would happen to me after that. I would say, I can't go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop. So now I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps and use some self-care, and I'm going to swear off. I'm going to make this firm resolution. It's firm, too. I mean it. I mean business. You hook me up to a lie detector, I'm going to pass it. That I will not binge again. And while I am dieting or abstinent, that means while the food is down, whether it's you call it dieting, you call it abstinence, whatever it is, I start having feelings. How do I feel? Restless, irritable, discontent. And those three words are so profound and such great descriptive words, because restless is exactly what happens. I'm like a caged animal. I can't sit down. I'm looking in the cabinets like something magical is going to appear or disappear. You know, I'm irritable. Everything is like a nail on a chalkboard for me. Everything. And I'm discontent. And the best description of that is the shine wears off of everything. You know, I'm a very willful woman. I can make a lot of stuff happen, and I would get what I would want, but it would never, ever please me. I was never happy. That's discontentedness. So what happens? When I have this, I'm at the bottom here, as you can see. We hit bottom. I don't hit bottom when I'm in the middle of the binge. I hit bottom when I put that food in. Because what am I going to do now? What's going to be different now than any other diet that I've ever, ever been on? So I start moving into the second half of this wheel here. As you can see, we're in the mental obsession. And all of us felt at times that we were regaining control. I feel like I'm in control. I lost 20 pounds. I feel pretty good, right? But these intervals, which are usually brief, for me it's like the blink of an eye, are inevitably followed by still less control, which lead to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I'm beating myself up. How did I do that again? If I don't pick up at that stage, I move over here to mental obsession. All right? I've got the idea that somehow, someday, I'm going to control and enjoy my food and my food behaviors. This is the earmark of a compulsive overeater. This is the greatest delusion that I suffer from, is that I can control and enjoy my eating. The problem is when I'm controlling it, there's very little enjoyment at all. And when I'm enjoying it, there's very little control. So it's a catch-22. I cannot live in this state for long. What happens is insidious insanity begins. There's always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel, that means running at the same time, with my sound reasoning, I know I should not be picking up whatever I'm looking at. There inevitably ran some insane, trivial excuse for taking the first bite. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check, and the insane idea won out. You know, in step two, it says, came to believe in that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. That implies that I'm insane. But the insanity they're talking about is not clinical insanity. It's not depression and schizophrenia. It's not like that. My insanity is the decision to take the first bite, knowing about what's going to come and what's going to follow after that. There's that beautiful description on page 37 of alcoholic torture. And we can definitely parallel that with compulsive eating torture. So what happens is I have come full circle. I'm in this cycle of eating and quitting and eating and quitting and relapsing and absence and relapsing that, or dieting and binging, whatever you want to call it. I'm in this cycle and I can't get out. Somewhere over here on the right-hand side of your page, we need to have a breakthrough. The food has got to be down at the bottom. We have got to be abstinent. And I need to start practicing those steps in order to gain a psychic change, a different way of thinking, feeling, and acting. How do I do that? Well, that's what the steps are for. The steps are designed to do that. So as you can see from this description and from, you know, the information that I have gathered and my friend has gathered from AA and from the doctor's opinion, that abstinence is not the end-all be-all. It's just our ticket into the door to working the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. So going back to abstinence, we can also change back to the second page now. We're going to define abstinence. What is abstinence? Or what are my alcoholic ingredients, for lack of a better word? What drives me into that phenomenon of craving? And what are my behaviors? So let's take the first one. If you'd like to, you can make a list on the back of your sheet of all of your binge foods. Now, if you're abstinent and you haven't binged for a long time, think back. You know, think back about when you were eating. What were those go-to foods? What were those things that you knew that if you wanted that feeling of ease and comfort, they would do it for you? Now, we can talk briefly about food. And hopefully everybody's okay with that. What time does this workshop go till? 11:30. So it's usually much more interactive. So let's talk about some of those things. So if I were to take you down, you know, the aisles of a grocery store, what are those go-to foods? Start making a list of the things that you go to, okay? Baked goods. That's a most compulsive overeaters really like those, you know, refined carbohydrates. Things like cakes, cookies, brownies, desserts, pies, all those things. And even breads. I was much more of a fan of bread than I was any baked good. So, you know, everybody is very different. This is not a cookie-cutter plan of eating. You get your plan of eating, that's something totally different, but abstinence is what are you going to abstain from? And not everybody has the same addictive ingredients. And I can be abstinent from my sponsor's ingredients, and maybe they'll work, but maybe it won't work, because they might be totally different. So if you find your own individual abstinence, the success of your program is going to be so much greater. You know, for years I was how abstinent back in the day, and they took care of major ingredients for me, flour and sugar, and one of my behaviors, which was volume, and it was great. You know, I had very long-term abstinence, but when I picked up on a ingredient that was neither of those things. And I find out later that it's much bigger than flour or sugar for me, and I'll get into that later. So if you were going down the snack aisle, what would those snack items be? Write those down. Don't be shy. Don't be afraid to think about food. You know, this is a searching and fearless food inventory. Dairy aisle. How about that? How about, you know, all those frozen goodies, ice creams, yogurt, even frozen yogurts, even plain yogurt that's supposed to be healthy for you. I would binge on that. Puddings and stuff like that. And then, of course, prepared foods. Welcome through the prepared food area. I always know what my go-tos are there. You know. Condiments. What are those condiments that you like to pour all over everything? You know? I'm not a condiment girl, but there are condiment people that I've worked with, and it's like you can't even eat it without that condiment on there. Write those down. How about soft drinks? Soft drinks are really important to write down also. A very telling thing that you can write down is your coffee and your tea. How much coffee and tea are you drinking during the day? What are you putting in your coffee and tea? That's the more important question. What are you adding to it? Go down the candy aisle. What kind of candies are you eating? You know, for me, you couldn't pay me to eat a Jolly Rancher. Don't like them?
No.
Don't like them? What's the point? But if you had a Hershey bar in front of me, I'll run you over for that. So, you know, that's very telling also. You know, maybe it's not the grocery store. Maybe we want to go down fast food lane. What are those fast food items that you like? Maybe it's not that. Maybe it's bar food. I love bar food. How about that? What kind of apps do you like to get? Before you even have your dinner, you need to get some appetizers. And there's always the ice cream shop. What do you put on your ice cream? What kind do you have? Even if you're having sugar-free, write that down. Very important. And restaurant specialties. Like, what kind of restaurants do I like to go to? Because I know they have that thing. That thing. You know, I remember Red Lobster would have that cheese bread thing. Oh my gosh, well, I wasn't going to Red Lobster having accident, you know, seafood dinner. I was going for those muffins. Whatever they were. I don't even remember now. But as a compulsive overeater, every restaurant held some kind of binge food for me. And I would know which ones had what and what did it for me. I'm getting an effect from food. Normal people don't get an effect from food. I get an effect from it. You know, I need a release from care, boredom, worry. I need a release from restless, irritable, discontent. And food was one of those things that I would use. When I wasn't using food, I was using alcohol. I could control and enjoy food if I was drinking alcohol. I could stay on my diet all day long if I was drinking alcohol. See, because what happens, I find out, is I suffer from something much greater than food addiction or alcoholism. The food and the alcohol are symptoms for me. I have something that I have to attack that's much bigger than food and alcohol. And how do I do that? I need to put the food and the alcohol down first. So then we're going to make a shift here. Well, before we make that shift, let's look back on our list. And you can do this at home. Go into some quiet meditation. Think about those things. Think about if there's a snowstorm coming and you can't get out for a week, what are you going to make sure you have in your house? What will you drive at 2 o'clock in the morning for that you wouldn't, you know, if you needed medicine, you wouldn't go out at 2 o'clock in the morning. You wait till the next morning. But what will you go out at 2 o'clock in the morning for food-wise? Think about those things and write those down. We're going to break them down into ingredients, into their isolated into ingredients. Now, in a workshop, we have colored pencils, and we like to, you know, really make it clear. So if you can just bear with me, somehow on your list, maybe you can put a little S next to everything that has sugar. Is sugar showing up on your binge food list? Now, sugar showed up on a lot of my binge food list, but not more than other ingredients. It showed up. Next one, flour. Put a little F next to flour. Flour for me was weighted out sugar by far. Everything that I binged on seemed to carry some form of flour. The third one that we do not talk about a lot in program that is huge for me is high fat content. Mm-hmm. High fat content, I can turn any abstinent food into a non-abstinent food by adding some fat. Mm-hmm. High salt content, mm-hmm. especially when I mix it with fat, mm-hmm. especially. This is an insidious one in Overeaters Anonymous that a lot of people can find that they just can't get rid of, and it's artificial sweeteners. It's almost like a safe bet, but I'm here to say that artificial sweeteners is to sugar what methadone is to heroin. Mm-hmm. My organs and my brain cannot differentiate artificial sweeteners and sugar, and I will. Not everybody does this, some people do, start using artificial sweeteners in place of sugar. I personally do not have an allergy to artificial sweeteners. I get sick from it. So I don't use artificial sweeteners at all. I get headachy, nauseous, I grind my teeth. I can't have it. I don't know what that is, but it's not an allergy. It doesn't create the phenomenon of craving. So artificial sweeteners, you might be putting that on your oatmeal, your yogurt, in your drink, and all of a sudden you're going through pack of the day. Look at that. Caffeine. This is really interesting. It took me a long time to figure this out. Am I addicted to caffeine? Am I getting an effect from caffeine? If you said to me, hey, Maria, you want a cup of coffee? I'm going to Starbucks. And I would say, yeah. Well, what are you taking it? I would like some half and half, please. And you said to me, hey Maria, want a cup of coffee? Black? I would say no. Yeah. My coffee in the carrier for my other alcohol, which is fat, high fat content. I want that sweetness or that thickness, that richness. It's not the right color for the skin though, you know? Anybody ever say that? It's not the right color. So those are the most addictive ingredients that are listed there. There are others. Corn is very popular for some people too. They can't have a lot of corn products. So this is not the end of the list. You might come up with something else. You might say, I can't have watermelon. Some people can't with it. It's very high in sugar content. So these are not the only ingredients. When we move on now, what do you do with that information? What do you do with that? So not everybody's going to have the same addictive ingredients. I do not have all six of these. I have three of these. So my abstinence is defined as I abstain from sugar, flour, and high fat content in any form, entirely. Entirely. If you go to the Doctor's Opinion Workshop today, you will learn what entire means. And a lot of people also don't want to hear that. Entire? Come on. What I learned is I can't even have trace amounts of my ingredients. Not even trace amounts of it. The phenomenon of craving will develop. It will. So now you know what to abstain from, ingredient-wise. once you have your list. And if you need help, you find a recovered woman or man, somebody that's been this way, that knows this information, that can help you. You don't have to do this. This is a WE program. So now we're going to identify some behaviors, and there's many more behaviors, but I have listed some common ones here. Meat volume eater, even if it's carrots, and I get that feeling of being full, I like to be full. A normal eater will say, oh no, I'm getting a little full. I feel uncomfortable. I have never said that in my life. I've never said that. Never. It was almost the goal. The goal was to get like, I'm gonna be full up to here. That's a volume eater. And how do I deal with volume eating? I weigh and measure my food. Every one of these behaviors is gonna have like an antidote. You know, something that you can do to combat it. Some big boundary or thing that you can do to keep yourself from that behavior. And practice, you know. Immediate gratification / procrastination. What does that mean for me? I let myself get hungry when I'm in the food. I let myself get so hungry that I can't even prepare food. I need to go now, now, now. Don't ask me where I want to eat. Just pull me into a place. I need it now. Anybody relate to that? I mean, you know, the blood sugar is down, my head's hurting, I'm turning into an irritable bitch. And my husband's just like, what do you want? I'm going to the procrastination, you know, is that, you know, I just waited too long. I waited too long. Busyness and slothfulness. This is how I lived my life before I had a psychic change. Running at 100 miles an hour, and then, oh my God, I'm so exhausted. I need to Netflix, binge watch some shows, and eat, and just relax. I worked hard this week. Anybody relate to that? You know, this all or nothing behavior sometimes for addicts is very prevalent, and we need to find that gray and be happy in gray, you know? Bites, licks, and tastes. Again, I cannot open a door for that phenomenon of craving to come through. Even a trace amount, a bite of my husband's something, a lick of my kid's ice cream cone, a taste of that thing that's going by at the wedding. I can't have any of it. I can't open that door or crack. Grazing, you know, I'm not a grazer. I really like the extremes, but some people eat little bits all day long. You know, they just keep eating all day long. That's grazing. Binging and purging. Binging is just that volume eating again, and the purging is how do I get rid of it? I need to get rid of it. That's a behavior that's really insidious. I don't have experience with that, but there are many women and men that do. Binging and excessive exercising. Wish I had that one. I don't know. You know, I mean, but in all joking, it's not funny. It can be very, very taxing on your body. But it's also here. That obsession, you're driven. The big book talks about being driven by 100 forms of, you know? That's what I picture with excessive exercising. And then binging and restricting. That's how I lived my life. I would binge, you know, when I got home from work because I was free. I didn't have to be sharp. I didn't have to be accountable, you know? I could just, like, go into oblivion. And then the next morning, I could go back to work and I can restrict all day. And girls would be like, you didn't eat yet? What are you doing? I would go for days without eating, but I always followed it up with a binge. Always. I was never a good anorexic. I always followed it up. Yeah, so we've got lots of behaviors and some of them are listed here. And you just like, think about what leads you into that obsessive compulsive thinking about food, you know, about your weight, getting on the scale. Constantly, I had to put that down. I get on the scale when I go to the doctor. That could be like once a quarter, one, you know, twice a year. My clothes are going to tell me. My clothes are going to tell me. So hopefully, we now can define what are accidents. What am I abstaining from? So some of these things that I talked to you about with the behaviors is for myself. I'm a volume eater. I weigh and measure my food. I also am a binging and restrictor, so I eat every 4 to 5 hours like clockwork. My body tells me, oh, it's time for lunch. I'm not starving. It just tells me, you know, I'm running like a normal person. No isolates, please. Nothing in between. I don't eat any meals in between. I don't have any snacks. You know, I'm not a toddler. I don't need snacks. So this tells me what I abstain from. And then, like I said, the abstinence is my ticket to the 12 steps into spiritual awakening. So, you know, the title of this workshop is Smashing the Delusion. So what am I delusional about? You know, abstinence. What I need to define it. Let's make it black and white. Let's make it real clear. What am I going to abstain from? And the spiritual solution is why I'm here. If I could get to a normal body size and normal mind, mental functioning through a commercial food plan, I would have done it years ago. It would have been successful. And I would not have to do it repeatedly. Right? It would have been a one and done thing. You know, if my doctor tells me that I have horrible blood numbers, my weight is out of control, I have sleep apnea, I'm suffering from plantar fasciitis, and this is all true for me, and I leave that doctor's office and have to hit the fast food place because I can't deal with that information, that's a compulsive overeater. I need something that's going to break through that. And what breaks through that is a spiritual experience. I need to take the 12 steps. While I am taking the 12 steps, I have to do it abstinently. I hate to tell you, I hate to break it to you, but we can't take the 12 steps while we're in the food. As an AA member, I would never say, come on, we're going to take this 12 steps to a drunk person. We need to be mentally clear in order to accept what somebody has to offer. I have to understand it and I have to accept it. I'm not going to do that if I'm still in the food and all fogged up. So what happens is there's a really beautiful place here for the 9 tools of the program. The use of the OA's tools will support me while I am changing. The only thing that's going to change me is use of the 12 steps. I want to say that again. I get abstinent. And now I need to do something. You tell me I have to work the steps, but I'm not at a spiritual awakening yet. What do? This is a beautiful place to start working your tools to support you while the steps will eventually change you. Okay, a plan of eating is something totally different than abstinence. So you abstain from food and eating behaviors, and you do that abstinently in a plan of eating. That will tell you how, when, where, why you're eating. How much, what time, that's your plan of eating. Your sponsorship is going to be that guide that shines the light on you and your program and the 12 steps. I was here before, let me show you how I did it, and if you did it, chances are you can get the same thing I got. Meetings are gonna be where I find fellowship because I cannot do this alone. Meetings are not going to get me abstinent or keep me abstinent. They are going to be a place where I can find other people like myself to remind me what I suffer from. And remind me what I'm doing here. Looking out for the still suffering. Looking out for the next person. Telephone. Obviously, that's another way of connection. Service. What are you doing? I mean, until you start helping somebody, and that comes to step 12, there's other ways that you can serve other people. Showing up a little early, being a greeter, hugging somebody, asking them how they're doing, making some outreach calls. There's lots of service that can be done. Writing, I'm going to start writing when I do my 4th step. I was taught, you know, old school, there's no reason for me to be journaling about me. That keeps me all focused on me and my problem. Get into writing at 4th step. Literature, I'm a big book enthusiast. I will always be a big book enthusiast. It is the clear-cut directions to a spiritual awakening. Everything else is going to support that. Everything else is beautiful essays and other people's experience that they share with us so we can identify in. But we need to have our own experience. The only place I'm going to get that is following the clear-cut directions that are laid out in our big book. An action plan I find vital for working with newcomers because we're not self, we have no discipline. There's, and if you're like me, I have too much discipline. I'm all self-love or not. I need an action plan that's going to give me boundaries so I'm not going crazy and I'm not being slothful. I need to know what's important. Prioritize that day. That really works for a lot of people because in step 11 it says we let God discipline us. But that's not until step 11. How do I find discipline? You need your action plan. And of course, anonymity. That's a spiritual foundation of this program. So, the tools are going to support me, but the steps are going to change me. At every step, there's something vital that happens to me. And for me, it was as if there was a dimmer switch going on very, very gradually. And all of a sudden, I woke up one day, and it was right around step 10, right around step 10, practicing 11, that this light went on. And one of my friends in program said, Maria, I think you've had a spiritual awakening. You've had a psychic change. And I was like, what? Where do I find that? What's it look like? How do I know? I want to know. And she brought me right to a page in the big book that described what it means to be recovered. That I do not need to be in this program. For me personally, this is my feeling. If I say that I'm recovering every day from food addiction, that's how I feel. I feel like I'm just in sludge. There's no hope for me. I relapse twice in this program. What if I do it again? I go into that thinking. When I get into the big book and I see specific promises that I will what's the word? Tell me out, Joss. As if from a hot flame. I'm going to recoil. I'm going to recoil from food and behaviors as if from a hot flame. That's a promise. Like, that's what I want. I'm going to be neutral. I'm not going to be pushing anybody around. I'm not going to be sitting back, waiting. I'm in neutral. I'm in the stream of life. This is what I need. See, because what I suffer from is a distorted image of myself. I am self-absorbed to the core. Everything centers around me. Whatever's happening with you is surely going to affect me somehow. And that's just what we suffer from, selfishness and self-centeredness. I need a way out of that. That is what I need a way out of. The emotions that hit me, the big book tells me I'm going to be driven by fear, self-delusion, self-pity, self-seeking. My fourth step shows me how I show up in the world. It shows me my nature. Now I have something to bring for my powers to removal. I can't remove it, but my higher power can remove it in 6 and 7. And it shows me how I harm people, how I show up, and I step on the toes of others and they retaliate. I need that information so I can go out and clean up relationships with people in 8 and 9. Right? So if I practice 4 through 9 every day, I can stay in that realm of spiritually fit where I'm not being run down by my emotions. I'm not at the mercy of fear and resentment. I got a way out of those things. I got prayers that get me out of them, and I've got a way out. You know, that's what I need. I can't stay abstinent on abstinence alone. I can't. If you're a real compulsive overeater, you will identify with that. So, a psychic change. I just want to close with: what is a psychic change? A psychic change is the same thing. There's these four terms in the big book. Psychic change, spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, and personality change. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics and compulsive overeaters have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces of lives of these men and women are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. That's what I need. I need a way out of me. I need a way out of me. So I hope that this information proved to be vital for you to determine and define what abstinence is and what your own specific abstinence is. And if you are working with newcomers and you would like to help them define what their absence is. This is a great tool that you can use. I use it with all newcomers. It fortifies my own program. It reminds me of what I'm doing here, what I'm up against, and what the solution is. And that's a 12 step, a spiritual awakening. Thank you for being here.
The doctor's here. Okay. Stay for it. It's going to be good.
That was, yes, I will.
Okay.
I don't have any more, sir. I wish I did.
You went through your losing.
I know. I'm sorry.
I know. That was great.
I was told to make 40 copies, but there's more than 40 people.
Yeah,
so
you don't have any more. Okay, great.
That's good.
Yes.
Oh, hi. Hi.